That well-publicized Russian hack of the Democrats has reached much further into the party than what was initially perceived, the New York Times reported this week. The hack appears to have compromised even more organizations and over 100 personal email accounts. Gordon Carrera is the BBC security correspondent and author of Cyber Spies, The Secret History of Surveillance, Hacking, and Digital Espionage. Oh, Gordon, I am so thrilled to have you on the program. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So Anne Applebaum of The Washington Post told us last month that this was, she just boldly said this was so characteristically Russian that we might as well be Ukrainians covering an election in Kiev. Do you agree?
Oh, I think what's so interesting about this is it's Russia using, it seems, new technology, cyber hacking, to do something which it's done for many decades, which is active measures, influence operations. That's what the KGB, when it was still around, called this kind of work in the Cold War, which was to try and get hold of information, propaganda, sometimes disinformation, and to spread it out, to discredit your opponents or to try and influence politics and public opinion in other countries. That's something that the Soviet Union, the KGB, was very active at doing in the Cold War. And cyberspace, new technology, hacking just offers a new way to do that effectively, to try and get hold of information and to spread it out very efficiently sometimes by getting hold of large amounts of information. So I think you can see the way in which they're really just using technology to do something that they've characteristically done for many decades and do it in an effective way.
All right, so the hacking, that may be a little bit high tech, but the scheduling of the leaks, the precise timing of the leaks, that's classic Soviet-style KGB. Vladimir Putin learned that probably in his first week in training. And so we can expect the timing of more leaks to go along with, say, a week before the debates, something like that, or a week after the debates. What would you think?
You'd think so, yes. Although I think one of the things the Russians are quite careful to keep just slightly distanced from it, to have a level of plausible deniability. And you'd see that as well with intelligence operations in the Cold War. So they won't necessarily leak it themselves. They might use it, give it to a third party who might then give it to someone else to get it out there. And so in this case, it might be WikiLeaks, who may or may not know the original source of the information. And so they may not necessarily have total control about how it emerges and when, partly because they want that level of deniability. And cyberspace does make it easier to do that, because you don't necessarily have to meet someone or physically steal the secrets yourself, because you can do it remotely. But in this case, that the trail of information that security firms have been able to watch does seem to point back to Russia as the origin of this hack. And interestingly enough, in some cases, rival parts of the Russian intelligence infrastructure, who might have even been inside the DNC separately. And also one of those groups also involved in some very other interesting hacks, for instance, of a French TV channel just last year, which suddenly broadcast an image from ISIS, which and claimed to be from the cyber caliphate. Well, actually, it looks like the Russians might have been behind that as well. And that in the Cold War in the old days would have been called false flags, where you do something and you pretend it's someone else doing it. So again, you can see how spies use cyberspace to do things they've always done, but just in some innovative ways.
So let's parse this by now pretty famous claim on the part of Donald Trump. Listen.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
Now, Trump, of course, is famous for BS, total BS. Nevertheless, this sets down a marker that may, in fact, play directly to competition between hackers inside Russia who say, oh, those 30,000 emails, well, maybe the KGB can't find them, but we can find them. And actually, we know a back channel in France where we could find them. And something could actually emerge from a ridiculous statement like this.
I think it's quite possible that once lots of people knew that those emails were out there and they were on private servers, I think you'd have seen lots of intelligence agencies and hackers and activists, non-state actors, try and go after them. I think that's the reality. And often you will have multiple intelligence agencies trying to get inside a system. And we've seen them try and get inside political parties, presidential campaigns, going back a few cycles, you know, at least the last couple of presidential election cycles, to try and see what they could find. So I think you're likely to have multiple, you know, actors, yes, trying to get inside and find this. And they may have been doing that already. I think what was perhaps different about the DNC hack was releasing the information. You know, the kind of classic espionage is you try and find things out because you want to know about it. But releasing information is more akin to kind of this idea of influence operations or active measures, where you're trying to change behavior by making it public. And I think that's what was quite interesting. And that's the thing to look out for. And that's where perhaps Russia has been pushing the boundaries of what was considered normal cyber espionage in the last few years in all kinds of ways. And I think this looks like just one of them.
I think we also have to retune or re-engineer our assessment of alarm in the case of the Russians doing this sort of thing. I mean, it is not the era of the Cold War anymore. And there are Russians living in the United States. I mean, there are millions of them. They're voters. In many ways, this might be more akin to the way in which Israel tries to influence elections in the United States, as opposed to some, you know, ancient 1960s era Cold War influence. I mean, this is the sort of thing that goes on nowadays. Yes.
Well, yes, you're right. And don't be surprised if you discover that the US and the UK might be spying on other countries' elections. But influencing them and trying to influence them, that's a slightly different ballgame. And I think that there's trying to do that covertly, I think, is the kind of thing which can also backfire. And I think that's perhaps what might be happening, is you will get then pushback because people don't like the perception that another country might be influencing their elections. And it can end up being quite counterproductive. But yes, we are in a new world of cyber espionage, of information operations, of information warfare, in which information is being weaponized, stolen, used, and it's being used by companies, by individuals, by governments against each other, by non-state actors against each other. And I think it's certainly something we're going to have to get used to in the future.
Gordon Carrera, BBC security correspondent and author of Cyber Spies, The Secret History of Surveillance, Hacking, and Digital Espionage, finding himself hard at work covering the U.S. presidential election. Gordon, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.